Well, here we are in Southern California in the greater LA area. LA, the biggest city west of the Hudson. Yes, big town. We do things big down here, don't we? This is such a big town. This is such a big area. It's too big for one baseball team. They've got two. Too big for one basketball team. They've got two. And it's too big for one keynote speaker. We've got two. Representing the state of Massachusetts, the state of Oregon, the state of being really cool people, and the state of the American Council of the Blind, ACB President Kim Charlson, and first ACB man. I'm trying. Brian Charlson. Yay!
Dude.
Let's sneak it out of here.
I'm getting a suggestion for first ACB dude.
That's right.
There you go.
No, I'm good. Thank you, Frank. So, Brian always tells me that he's not the first man, he's the first dude. So we have to be respectful of his title, don't we? So when Jeff reached out to me a few weeks ago and he said, you know, I really feel bad asking you. You're doing three presentations throughout our convention, but, you know, could you do the banquet address? And I said, well, I don't think that's a problem, but maybe we should do something different. And so I said, how about if Brian and I both talk to you as your banquet speakers? Now, there was a time in my life when you never would have seen me having a shared banquet address with Brian. For the longest time, I was like, I'm my own person. I am not going to share the podium with you. But so I, you know, and so we've kind of had this rule in the Charlson household that when one person serves on a board, the other one kind of steps back a little bit. And as you all know, Brian had a long career in ACB as an officer, and I was not involved until 2007, when I think this gentleman from California ran for president of ACB named Mitch Pomerantz, and he talked to me about considering running for first vice president. And so we've kind of shared and supported each other, but not necessarily been on boards at the same time. But a few years ago, someone asked us to speak to a group of university students about technology. It was actually for a library science program. And so I was supposed to talk about library services, and he was going to talk about technology. Seemed like a good fit. So we did the presentation, and we got rave reviews. People liked hearing from both of us. So I certainly hope tonight that we might get rave reviews, and you liked hearing from both of us, a little variety. So and I'm only going to tell one joke, so you're probably pretty glad about that. I generally don't remember punchlines, so. But this is for ACB Radio, and you got to have an ACB Radio joke. So, and it has to do with two antennas. The two antenna joke. That two antennas were getting married, and. And somebody said, well, you know, how was the service? And I said, well, I don't know. The service was nice, but the reception was great. So, that's my joke. We're done now. No. I hope we can say the same for ACB Radio. What Brian and I are going to do is tag team a little bit on our presentation, and we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to continue a theme that was talked about at the Guide Dog Users of California luncheon today, and that was about international travel. So I wanted to talk a little bit. Mitch and I represent the American Council of the Blind on the World Blind Union North American Caribbean Region Board. Mitch actually serves as vice chair of our regional board. And the World Blind Union is an organization that ACB belongs to, and we play an important role in that organization. There are 7 regions around the globe with representatives from consumer and service provider organizations. And in 2016, the World Blind Union will be holding their first General Assembly in the United States in August of 2016 in Orlando, Florida. So we're looking forward to that opportunity. There's generally about 1,500 delegates from 140 countries, and several days of presentations about issues and concerns of blind people from around the world. So sometimes we talk about issues that have been on the agenda here this weekend. Employment, education, rehabilitation, emergency preparedness for people with disabilities, all these same kind of issues but with a more international consideration. And it's sometimes the issues are very, you know, we think we've got issues here in this country, but there are so many people who are blind in this world. It's estimated that 4 million children who are blind or visually impaired do not have an opportunity to have an education. So those are the kinds of things, really global kinds of issues that we talk about and try to work with in the World Blind Union. So one of the issues that our region in particular, which is the United States, Canada, and the Caribbean, there's a lot of islands, and they collectively belong to the World Blind Union through the Caribbean Council of the Blind. So we've been talking with them, the Caribbean Council and the World Blind Union, about guide dog access to Caribbean islands. Those of you who have dogs can relate that it's challenging because every island has different rules. And we've tried to do some, you know, kind of coordination with some of the organizations, and it just hasn't necessarily worked out. But at least some of the islands that at one time had regulations and laws in place where you could not bring your guide dog, have changed their laws. And Antigua is an example of that. And this past June, we had a regional meeting in Antigua. Now, I know you're all saying, well, that means Mitch and Kim got to go to the Caribbean. Ooh, that was hard. It was a very beautiful trip. And I took my dog, Dolly, and I did the paperwork, and we heard a lot about some countries require quite a bit of paperwork, others don't. Antigua wasn't too bad. I had some international travel certificate and things like that. But what really surprised me, and I've never had this happen, and maybe I was had, but that who knows, I have been in countries around the world where I had to pay for me to get out, like an exit tax. So it was a good thing I saved a little money in my wallet to take care of that. But when I was arriving in Antigua, the quarantine officer came and looked at Dolly's papers, and he said, "Very nice. You're one of the first people with a service dog to visit our country. We're really excited about this. And because of that, I'm only going to charge you $80. And I said, "For what?" And it was, "Well, it's the entrance and exit fee for your dog." I said, "Is there one for me?" And he said, "No, just your dog." So we had a one-day meeting in Antigua, and part of that meeting was a very special, basically almost like a state dinner where the highest ranking British leader for the island, I think they call him the Governor General, was the honored guests, and senators, some representatives and heads of agencies were present. And knowing that, you know, I was there with Dolly, and they didn't have very many, you know, guide dogs in the country, but I had no problems with, you know, taxis or anything. It was quite good. And we got to the dinner, and we all sat at a table, and we were getting settled, and someone comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder. And they said, "Pardon me, madam, you cannot be in this room with your dog." And I said, "Oh, but what do you mean?" You know, I play a little bit dumb here. It works sometimes. And she said, "Well, we have a policy. We do not let dogs into this building." "Oh, well, I don't know anything about your policy, but I would recommend that you go up to the gentleman at the head table named Tony and talk to him. And he's the first vice president of the Caribbean Council of the Blind, and I'm sure he'll take care of things." So off she went to talk to Tony. And Tony, she got up there and she said, "We have a problem. The lady with the dog, we need to move her to the patio because she cannot be in this dining room with her dog." And Tony said, "Oh, really? I didn't know your patio was that big. If you move her to the patio, you're going to have to move all of us to the patio." So she went away. She says, "Well," and off she went. Didn't come back until dessert. And I didn't hear anything from anybody else throughout the whole meal. Right before we left to go back and board the bus to get back to the hotel, someone said, "Well, it was because of the Governor General." And I said, "Well, I don't know why. Maybe he doesn't like dogs. I don't know." But so when we left table by table, and we got a little signal, "Okay, your table can leave now." So I got up, and I walked out with Dolly and, you know, along with everybody else. Everything was good. When I got in the bus, somebody came up after me and they said, Governor General, thank you, he was watching you walk by and he smiled. So then all the people that were, you know, sponsoring the dinner smiled, and they were all happy because he smiled. So it was. But I got back to the hotel, and I had to take quite a bit of ribbing from my other WBU colleagues because they said, "Do you know that you almost caused an international incident with you and Dolly?" So while Mitch and I were going to meetings, there were a couple other people traveling with us, Donna and Brian, that had a little bit of an adventure, and they did some interesting things, and Brian's going to tell you about that.
See, we laughingly say in Massachusetts that Kim is kind of the U.S. News and World Report person, and I'm kind of the People Magazine person. So Donna and I, you know, your shopper par excellence here in California, and I had an opportunity to hire a driver to take us into town. And one of the great parts of that trip was he had to wear one of those chauffeur caps. Now, a chauffeur cap on a guy in the Caribbean can hide all kinds of things. And in this particular case, it hid dreadlocks that extended down well past his waist. And he was told he must keep his hat on in his official capacity. And it was pretty warm down there. So we felt bad for him, and we finally tickled his funny bone enough that he pulled over, took the hat off, and let us take a look at the dreads. But anyway, eventually we got down into the shopping district, and in typical touristy fashion, if you turned left when you got to the shopping district, you got to those real fancy, expensive shops that you can find in virtually any expensive high-end mall in the United States, right? That's where the cruise people go, right? And then you turn the other direction, and you get to see, you know, handicrafts and things along those lines. Well, we made a left instead of a right, so we saw all of those shops we had seen several other times elsewhere. But eventually we retraced our steps to where we could go over to that part that was shopping for trinkets and that kind of stuff. And after we extricated ourselves from the booth behind the booth behind the booth behind the booth behind the booth with the lady with the needles and the all the handmade clothes, all of which look pretty much alike. But after we extricated ourselves from there, we went up to a restaurant on a rooftop, had a lovely pineapple smash. It's non-alcoholic, sorry about that. But very tasty nonetheless. Very tasty nonetheless. And because we were going to be heading back quite a distance back to the hotel, we decided to visit the restroom. And while I'm standing outside the restroom waiting for my turn, there's a lady there who speaks excellent English and the like, as they do mostly in the Caribbean. And she said, hi, and you waiting for the restroom? Yeah, me too. All that good stuff. And she says, you know, you're the second blind person I've ever met. And I said, that's terrific. I'm glad to expand your education a bit here. Most of us blind people do stand outside of restrooms like pretty much everybody else. It's not a disability thing. And she laughed and she says, and I said, so who is the other blind person you know here from the islands? And she says, well, kind of. I said, kind of. Well, he's from here, but he's actually up in New York City. What Kim didn't tell you is that one of her colleagues at the Perkins School for the Blind for many, many years was a gentleman named Aubrey Webson. He was in charge of international programs at Perkins. And when they had presidential elections in Antigua, his college roommate was elected president and got on the phone and asked if his college buddy would like to be Antigua's ambassador to the UN. So he accepted that post. And he'd been after us for years to go to Antigua and stay with his family down there. So we finally get a chance to go to Antigua. I meet a woman who knows him standing outside of a bathroom down in the shopping district. And guess where Aubrey was? In Boston, watching his daughter graduate from high school. So we swapped places and never saw him down in Antigua. It's the very nature of the world. It's a very, very small place. And if you're involved in blindness in one form or another, that smallness comes to rest many, many times during the course of your international travels or domestic travels, for that matter. Now, Kim mentioned Antigua as one of the places we've gone. And this year, although there are many years where you don't do any international traveling in ACB's name, this year we did it twice. The second time was just a few weeks back when we went to São Paulo, Brazil. Anybody been to Brazil? Well, when I grew up, Brazil was that place that had the Amazon jungle, right? Isn't that what you think of? But Brazil is an incredibly long country, north to south. In fact, it's the longest country on the planet. And if you were to fly down to Brazil, to the northern third, you would be talking Amazon jungle. But São Paulo is in the southern third. And now we're talking very much like Southern California in terms of the climate. Now, you take Southern California and you take the world's fourth largest city, a city four times the size of New York, and every bit as urban as New York. We are talking skyscrapers, we're talking smog. We're talking lots and lots of taxi drivers. Uber, by the way, was just barred from São Paulo. I'm not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they made that decision down there. And it was a fascinating place. And I'm going to tell you one Dolly story of my own. Wow. While we were there, we mostly ate at restaurants nearby the hotel. Kim had to go to meetings translated from Portuguese, meetings translated from Spanish, and meetings sometimes translated from English. While she was doing that, so of course, we were doing shopping and touristy kinds of things. But we mostly ate in the two restaurants nearest outside our hotel and a little 7-Eleven type stores where we bought the things we wanted to eat between meals. And we were out there one day, and up drove a truck delivering Brazil's second favorite soft drink. Now, their favorite soft drink, you can well imagine, is Coca-Cola, right? But their second favorite soft drink, which is a citrus-based soft drink, is called Dolly. So we got a wonderful picture of Kim and Dolly in front of a Dolly delivery truck in front of our hotel. You would have thought we would have brought back pictures of jungle life. No. Delivery trucks and Dolly the dog. Now, while we were there, we got great opportunities to see what blindness is all about in Brazil. And Kim is going to tell you a little bit about a tour that we took of the primary agency in São Paulo, Brazil.
So I just want to speak briefly about what I was doing there. I wasn't always shopping, and Brian was shopping mostly, but so I represent the North American Caribbean region on a group, a subset of the World Blind Union called the World Braille Council. And this is a group that, it's not talking about unifying Braille or the code or anything like that. It's more overarching kinds of issues that are universally applicable, whether it's an English-speaking country or French or Spanish or somewhere else in the world. So we talk a lot about the promotion of Braille, making more materials available, sharing resources, the Marrakesh Treaty, which I hope some of you have heard about, the Treaty for the Visually Impaired that we are hoping to pass here in the United States this year, meaning now, between now and a year from now. 10 countries have ratified Marrakesh, and we need 10 more for the treaty to go into effect. That would mean a lot more access to accessible format books all over the world, not just for to benefit others. Some think that the U.S. is really going to help other countries have more access to materials, since our library system is pretty robust as far as compared to other countries. But there's a lot that we can gain for people in this country who speak other languages as well as borrowing, especially Spanish, Portuguese, things like that. So the work of the World Braille Council continues, and we talk a lot about the issues that we talk about here, about literacy rates and shortages of instructors and how do you teach people Braille and trying to deal with some of those overarching issues. While we were in São Paulo, we had an opportunity to visit the Dorwina Noel Foundation. Dorwina was a blind woman in the 1940s. Well, she was actually around till 2010, but when she was young, there were no services for people who were blind in Brazil. And in 1946, she organized a foundation that was ultimately named after her and started providing rehabilitation services and services for children in São Paulo and all throughout Brazil. So we visited the foundation. They actually have audio description for television in Brazil. They have technology, of course. They have a pretty robust library service and recording studio program. And all because of the work of a pretty amazing woman in 1946 who worked for over 50 years building a foundation so that Brazil would have services for the blind. So I was immensely impressed with her. Just her story was incredible. Sometimes we think that life is a little challenging here, but it's pretty amazing to think that one person started a whole service delivery system for all of the blind people in Brazil, and that's really what she did. So I was very impressed with our tour of that foundation, and they invited me to become a patron of their library, which I was very excited about because I have a fairly good number of people in southeastern Massachusetts who live in Fall River and New Bedford that are Portuguese, speak Portuguese, about 400 of them actually, who are patrons of my library in Massachusetts. So we're going to start sharing some resources between the two libraries, which I'm very excited about. So I want to turn this back over to Brian because he wanted to talk a little bit about technology and what he saw in Brazil and some other things that he's dealt with technology.
One of the things that really matters as we travel internationally is many countries believe that somehow we must have the magic wand. We're the United States. If there's anything to be had, it can be had in the United States. All those blind, wonderful blind people in the United States have access to quality education, to rehabilitation, to technologies, because we see it on TV. And so when I've traveled in the name of ACB over the years, and I've been doing this for 30 plus years, I did things like go to Greece and work at the Lighthouse for the Blind in Athens and the School for the Blind in Thessaloniki. And they thought I was going to be able to bring them great new technologies. And I walked through the door and looked at their computers. They were every bit as modern as the ones I had back home. And this wasn't the same in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, mind you, it's a huge country, and we were seeing the most urban of urban parts of that country. If clearly you lived 300 miles outside of town, you were going to be struggling a little bit more with access to technology than if you lived in town and had access to that. But they use JAWS, they use NVDA, they use Zoom text and magic, just like we do. But many fewer people have access to it there. The exchange rate for technology is pretty amazing. Here, a dollar down there is worth three times as much as it's worth here, which means the reverse is true. Anything we buy for $1,000, they would have to pay the equivalent of $3,000 for the same thing. So it is very much like we experience here. Those who can afford it do have amazing things. Those who can't, don't. And they struggle with the same thing that we do here. I know I've been listening to many events here at the California Council the past couple of days, and we all know that change is both a good thing and a tough thing to deal with. So no sooner do you buy into doing things one way than somebody invents a different way to do it. And you get to go out and rebuy the next solution. You know, I've yet to get my iPhone 6S, and it's not going to happen for another year and a half when my contract runs out, right? So we all experience that, and they certainly do there as well. Now, no sooner did we get back from our trip to Brazil than we took a brief trip down to another strange, exotic place, Montgomery, Alabama. They speak strange down there. I'm not sure what the language is, but they speak strange down there. Alabamian, yeah. Sounds like it comes from the Caribbean, doesn't it? But very, very nice people, exotic foods, you know, things like grits and stuff like that. But nonetheless, we got a chance to go there, and that's unfortunately where I contracted my cellulitis, so that's why I'm hobbling around right now. But no sooner, so when people hear that we go to these exotic places, I want to assure you that ACB leadership at every level, for every time we get to go to Sao Paulo, Brazil, five times we got to go to great places like Pittsburgh, Kansas. You didn't know there was a Pittsburgh, Kansas, did you? Pittsburgh, Kansas. What was that place? There's a town that crosses the Arkansas-Texas border. Texarkana, right? I gave a speech with one foot in Texas and one in Arkansas one time. Once I gave my speech on one side of the pool in the lobby while all the conventioneers were on the other side of the pool. in the lobby.
That's cool.
One time the banquet was chili dogs. We all got a cut down cardboard box and went through a cafe line where you got to have one hot dog or three, with or without chili, with or without beans, with or without peppers, with or without Fritos. Yeah, it was haute cuisine, you know, real fancy food stuff. But it's been fun. It's been fun. My favorite speaking opportunity, I think, was in the state of Vermont when they held their state convention on a boat, on a ferry boat that normally carried cars from one side of the lake to the other. And I was the luncheon speaker, and we're there, and we've got these big diesel engines going, and we get about midway across the lake when the president taps me on the shoulder and says, "You're going to speak." Now, as soon as you hear the engines turn off, that's your cue to speak. And you'll know when you're to stop when the engines come back on, because they're going to turn them back on when we've drifted so far that we're in trouble, okay? So make your speech divisible by that kind of time. So we get to do some great things as ACB leaders. And one of the things we did most recently, and then I'll pass it over to Kim, was we get an opportunity to interact with people in a variety of different roles over a variety of many, many years. So you heard the other day that our former executive director, Melanie Brunson, is now working in a different capacity, right? She's working for the BVA, Blinded Veterans Association. And so we'll get to interact with her in that new role. Well, there's another name that we've heard in ACB for many, many years, and that is a gentleman formerly from WGBH Television, Larry Goldberg. All of that history of audio-described television, a great deal of that under the leadership of Larry Goldberg. Well, Larry doesn't work there anymore. He is the head of accessibility for a little company called Yahoo. And while out in Boston, because Larry took that job with one requirement, he didn't want to have to move out of Boston. And of course, Yahoo's out this direction, you know. So they allowed him to set up offices in one of their marketing offices in downtown Boston, and we got to go visit their accessibility lab the other day. And it was wonderful. You know, Larry was very much involved in closed captioning. That was his number one thing when he first got started, and then it expanded into this audio description thing. So when we went to Yahoo, it came as no surprise that there were a number of deaf individuals present and representatives of companies associated with deafness-related activities. And certainly the first half or two-thirds of the presentation was all about how Yahoo is dealing with captioning. What percentage of Yahoo video content is captioned? Anybody have a guess?
80%.
99% is captioned. Now, the fact of the matter is that when you see one video and you see it's captioned, that doesn't mean you assume that all the others are. So you might not experience this as a nearly 100% captioned. So naturally, those who were blind in the room or representing blindness agencies were waiting, you know, it's really wonderful to see these captions on the big screen up there, Larry, but what you got it for me? And I wish that Jeff and Mitch had been there, because what they demonstrated was the effort they went through to make Yahoo Fantasy Football accessible.
It is.
They went in and rewrote every tag to every control and every button through the entire system so that if you were to access it utilizing alt tags, those techie people out there, and all the appropriate tagging, it's not going to say that this button is a dash. They're going to say this is to delete a player. So they carefully went through all of it and made those modifications. And I'm telling you, I think people were more involved in the demonstration of that part of things in accessibility than they were about captioning of the New York Times video collection. So I'm going to turn it over to Kim, because she was there as well.
I was. I didn't pay a lot of attention to the fantasy football stuff, though. But we're very proud of Larry and the work he's doing with the marketing group at Yahoo. That's about 100 employees in the Boston area. One of the other issues that ACB is getting more actively involved in an advisory role as well is access to medical devices and trying to get those devices to be accessible. Most folks, I think, are pretty familiar with the work ACB's done in the area of accessible prescription labels. But there are a lot of medical devices that are really low-end devices. For example, a peak flow meter. How many of you know if you have asthma or any kind of breathing issue, you have to use a peak flow meter? It registers your breathing capacity. And they just give those things away. They're fairly inexpensive. But an accessible peak flow meter costs over $1,000. Just like the blood pressure cuff, a talking blood pressure cuff. You know, they have those. Those are fairly inexpensive, but to get a talking one, it's over $200. So ACB has, Eric Bridges represents ACB on a task force with the medical device industry, where we're starting to talk to them about the accessibility of devices. Sometimes you have to have antibiotics, and they kind of put them in an IV and a pump, and then they'll send you home, and 24 hours you're supposed to come back, but you're supposed to monitor that, or a heart monitoring system if you have any kind of cardiac issues. So there's a lot of equipment out there that is really meant to be used by the end user, but is not accessible to us, and could very well have you may need to use some of that equipment sometime in your life. So that's an area where ACB is getting more involved, because healthcare and independence go hand in hand. There's some work that ACB has done that I'm very proud of, and it was a structured negotiation from about four or five years ago with Sue Amater and the Health Issues Task Force. And it was with the American Cancer Society to provide accessible format materials through the American Cancer Society for people who have been diagnosed with cancer or have family members who have cancer. And I worked on that project with Sue, and it was, I thought, very, very important. And I didn't realize how important it was going to be until 2 years ago. 2 years ago in my life, two major things happened. I was elected the 11th president of the American Council of the Blind, which has been an incredible opportunity and experience for me to work with all of our members all across the country. And the other thing that happened to me was I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I'm very happy to report that I am in full remission as of 1 year, and I'm very pleased about that. Thank you. And I know how many lives are touched by cancer of all types. My colleague in Massachusetts, Marcia Dresser, just passed away a week ago from pancreatic cancer. And I know many of you in this room are breast cancer survivors or other kinds of cancer survivors or have someone in your family. So the work that ACB does in this area is incredibly important. And I want to acknowledge Linda Perrell for her work with the Breast Cancer Support Group for ACB. She and Lori Scharf from New York coordinate a group for women who are blind from all over the country who are going through or have finished or need that extra support as they go through their lives as a breast cancer survivor or are going through treatment. And that helped me at the times when I was able to drop in on their support group. And Linda, you do great work, and I really, really commend you for keeping that group going. It's very important to those women who are involved. So thank you for that.
And then I'll wrap up.
Yeah, Kim said I get to say one more word.
And, maybe more than one, but...
One Mississippi, two Mississippi. All right, so again, people don't realize all of the things that ACB has been involved with over the years and that have changed the lives of many, many people. Step out of this building, and you won't have to go very far before you find a little thing called detectable warnings. Who do you suppose had anything to do with that? It wasn't well-intentioned engineers that came up with that, ladies and gentlemen. It was people stepping off curb cuts that they didn't even know were there that made that happen. And they have three letters in common, ACB. When you stand at an intersection, when I was a kid, when you stood at an intersection, you just kind of stood there and you listened for that traffic signal go click, click, click. You could hear the timer inside the pole, and that's how you could tell when it came on and off. But for that matter, there wasn't so much traffic then. Then I moved to Massachusetts 30 years ago, and I learned how to do orientation the hard way. But there, I came across my first true audible traffic signals. And now, they're available virtually anywhere. It's so important that you remember that what made that happen was not a genie. It was somebody called the American Council of the Blind. When you go to a talking ATM machine, when you go to that talking ATM machine and you still have access to banking, that didn't happen by accident. That was an ACB initiative that made that happen. When college students can turn to Disabled Student Services and say, I have this textbook this crazy professor wants me to do, and it's not accessible to me, I need your help. The reason that kind of thing exists for college students today is because ACB members demanded it for themselves and for their scholarship recipients, like the ones we honored here this evening. There are many, many reasons, ladies and gentlemen, that you should be proud to be associated with the American Council of the Blind and its affiliates. It's all those men and women who worked before you that made your lives a bit easier. It's all the work that you're doing today that will make the lives of future generations a little bit more embracing, whether it be education, employment, social engagement. All of those aspects of life are better today because of ACB, and they'll be better tomorrow because of ACB. And I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to come enjoy your fellowship and participate in this evening's event with the first female president of the American Council of the Blind, Kim Charlson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to add that CCB has been there all the way and has been so supportive and really a trailblazer in this advocacy effort that ACB and CCB are true partners. And so many of the settlement agreements and other activities that we've been engaged in got their start here with CCB. So you should all be incredibly proud of your organization because you are all trailblazers and making a true difference in the world. So thank you again for the opportunity to be here with you this weekend and enjoy your hospitality. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Let's hear it for the Charlestons. They will be, yes. They will be going out early tomorrow, so this evening is your last opportunity. So we really thank them for all the presentations that they've done this weekend. One more time, let's hear it for both of them.